What's up, guys? It's three-time NFL Pro Bowler, all-decade return specialist, Josh Cribbs. I want to welcome you to the Match Sports Connection podcast, where Alex hosts the Mid-American Conference Best.
Welcome back to the Max Sports Connection podcast, all Maction, all the time. I'm your host, Alex the Captain, and today I am joined by my good friend and writer for Red Shirt Sports, Omar Borja, a.k.a. the Burger Popper. Omar, thanks so much for joining me this week.
I mean, the honor is mine. I mean, I know we coordinated this back in December, then I had a training exercise for a month, and I mean, I was excited. I was like, one of the things I was looking forward to after the exercises, getting here to talking about Mac football, honestly learning about Mac football in the process, doing the research. I mean, just being out here in El Paso, I mean, the Mac and I mean, being out here in El Paso and like the week with the weeknight Mac games, it's kind of hard, you know, working late and everything to like get into Mac football during the season. So I'm excited. I mean, I was looking forward to it, and you know, I'm just so honored to be here.
Well, yeah, again, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule to come and join me. But I do need to ask, and I'm sure you've been asked this a billion times, I need an explanation on the name Burger Popper. What is that about?
So, I mean, it's really a dumb thing. Like my old roommate from college, like we always like joke around and like, you know, I called him like something about Burger King. I made a joke about Burger King, about him like needing to lay off the Burger King or something. Okay. And he said, if I'm the Burger King, then you're the Burger Popper. He's like, step your game up. And it's actually my header, like that picture, like that Snapchat that he sent me, like the part, like the words, like that is my header. So, I mean, you can like, I guess if you're watching this, you're listening to this podcast, like you can look at my Twitter and see like, you know, the root of the Burger Popper nickname. So I figured this is something funny too. Like everyone thinks about Burger King, but what's the opposite of a king, a popper? So
I love that so much. That's a great story. But that, I mean, that's a cool connection to have with your roommate in college too, right? It's a fun little back and forth. And obviously, it's taken off. You know, you're using that as the handle. You're using that as kind of your thing, and you know, people love it, and I love it. So, and I mean, I'm more of a McDonald's guy, but we'll move on from that. I guess tonight I wanted to, you know, we talked about this and we coordinated this. I wanted to talk about a couple different things. The big focus is the expansion of the playoffs, the portal, and kind of the max opportunities to get into the playoffs. So let's talk the expansion first. Do you see this helping or hurting the Mid-American Conference in terms of the playoffs expansion? I'd love to get your thoughts. I've got my thoughts, but I want to give you the floor first here.
So I come from, I guess, a different perspective when it comes to, I guess, the playoff expansion, because me, one of the other nicknames I've tried to like take on at Redshirt Sports is the Cornacchia Bowl. So, I mean, I love bowl season, right? Yeah. And this bowl season, I mean, it was just, I mean, every bowl season's great. This one just, you know, seemed amazing, I guess. Mm-hmm. What distinguished it, I couldn't tell you, but there are just many great moments. One of them including, it's funny you're wearing the Miami shirt, because their appearance in the Cure Bowl on ABC. Mm-hmm. And looking at that, that was one of the most viewed bowl games, group of five bowl games, of course, but one of the most viewed non-New Year's Six bowl games. It was in the upper half. So I'm not going to go with the doomsday scenario on here and talk about, you know, all non-New Year's Six, all group of five bowls like are going to be shuttered. There have been rumors about that, but we really don't know until May, like the future of bowl season. But I can see it being easier for ESPN, especially now that ESPN, or I guess the college football playoff at large, is sticking with ESPN as its sole TV partner. That's, if you add up the games, you have the four first round games, you have the four quarterfinal games, the playoffs or the semis. So that's about like 10 games, I think, if my math is correct, 10 TV slots of, I guess, ideally what ESPN want to be standalone games. So as a result, I see ESPN kind of, you know, doing away with some of those Group of Five bowl games. So some of those prime TV slots that the MAC has slid into, like the MAC in particular, I mean, the Group of Five in general, but in particular, the MAC, thinking about the Cure Bowl this year, the Quick Lane Bowl even, where that's a standalone game the day after Christmas, where I know we talked about that the last time that we talked, how that's a prime slot because everyone has holiday fatigue and, you know, it's a day after Christmas. So I see it that way. But I guess in a more generalized like way, looking at the playoff itself, I see the MAC benefiting because with Houston, Houston, UCF, and Cincinnati all leaving for the Power Five or Power Four now. I think we saw last year that the gap is closed between the American and the rest of the Group of Five. So I definitely see the 12-team playoff in that way, helping the MAC out a lot, where it's going to be easier. Where, I mean, a team like Toledo last year was, had they won the conference and had they had Illinois missed that field goal, like, they likely would have been the Group of Five representative in the New Year's Six. So it's a double-edged sword, I guess. I can't really give you a straight answer, but that's the perspectives that I'm, you know, coming from.
So for me, I think a lot of it comes down to, I think it helps, right? Because, and I've talked to the commissioner about this before, I've talked to coaches and whatever. Now that the playoffs are expanded, we're providing greater access to more teams. We're giving, you know, now that the Group of Five gets an automatic bid, we're giving them an opportunity to go and compete for a national championship. My whole philosophy for years, and you can run this all the way back to the beginning of time, in terms of you know, just my thoughts, in terms of my feelings, I really truly believe a college football coach in Division I, single A, or FBS, as it's now been called, cannot stand in front of all of his players today and say, if we go undefeated, we have a shot at a national championship. With this expanded playoffs, he can look every single one of his players and say, hey, we go undefeated, we have a shot at a national championship. I think to further that, an Akron, right, who has been historically awful in the last several years, really since 2000, and I want to say 17, when they last made their MAC championship appearance, they lost to Toledo in that game. Since then, they have not been a good program. I mean, and plenty of times before, they were not a good program. I want to be clear. I'm not overlooking that. And I see you wearing your Kent State shirt. So big rivalry there for the Wagon Wheel. But I think, you know, it's an important thing to look at what the Mid-American Conference brings to the table. There's a lot of stability there. But I do think that before, you would have been lucky if a 12-0 Akron or 13-0 Akron would have been even considered for a New Year's Six. Now they can be considered for a national championship or for a spot to compete for a national championship. And I think that's so, so critical as we continue down this wild, wild west that is college sports, college football in particular, but college athletics. I think it's so important that you are able to tell everybody now has a far more equal shot at a national championship than they did before under the old system, than they did before in the BCS era.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree. That's a great point. Like what you were saying about, you know, say a 12-0 Akron team, where I guess in most years too, I guess that, like, that conversation coaches have, I guess in most years, like, it would be, yes, we can make the New Year's Six possibly, but I guess the pinnacle for most MAC teams before this 12-team playoff is, hey, we might play a Power Five in the Quick Lane Bowl, or hey, we might play the Sun Belt champion in the Mobile, Alabama, Dollar General, whatever sponsor it was, or, you know, that cycled through. So I definitely think it's good. It's good that the stakes are raised for sure. And, that, you know, because I guess that aspect of, like, you know, while the stakes are raised and everyone has a clear path, like, they don't play the games on paper, of course, too. Right. So people can say all they want, which I know, looking at the question list, like, I do have some thoughts on, I guess, the gauntlet of the 12-team playoff. But yeah, like, you know, people can say, like, you know, we have a shot because we're on the field. Like, we're not letting the riders, we're not letting the polls, we're not letting the committee eliminate us. So
You're not automatically eliminated because of your school name and in week one. You know, it's there's an opportunity and there's a viable path for 133 teams now to make the FBS playoffs, and I think that that's so important. Kind of shifting from that though, I did want to address this portal situation, this wild, wild west of college football transfer portals, and we see it a little bit in the other sports. You know, we've seen softball, we've seen baseball transfers, but it just feels like it's so much more prevalent in the biggest sport in collegiate athletic, college football. Now that we are seeing an expanded playoffs, do you think that we are going to see the portal slowed down? Now that more teams have an opportunity to compete, are we going to see less guys leaving the group of five, or less guys leaving a MAC school to go play at a power five? Or are we going to see more guys from a power five, power four now, and come and play at a MAC school where they're like, hey, I'm getting buried on a depth chart here at Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State. But now that I know that a Toledo or a Bowling Green or an Akron or a Kent State has a shot to maybe go and try to make it to the playoffs, could we see that power shift and that balance shift of talent kind of start to migrate towards the Mid-American Conference?
So, I mean, that's an interesting point, I guess, the last part of the question, which I guess I'll address that later because that's something I'd never thought of. But I guess at the start, for me, I guess I look at it in kind of a pessimistic light because I guess looking back, because I guess the whole bowl opt-out kind of trend started in 2016-ish. Mm-hmm. Looking back and say like 2010, like imagining someone sitting out of like the Orange Bowl or like the Rose Bowl even with, I think it was Jack, it wasn't Jackson Smith and Jake, but I think it was Garrett Wilson that sat out of the Rose Bowl.
Yep.
That's unthinkable. So a lot of the things we think are unthinkable in the college sports world are becoming like very, you know, very common realities. Mm-hmm. So, and I think in a pessimistic light where a guy looks and sees like, okay, we have four more games to win a national title. Our odds are kind of slim, you know, I guess kind of does that calculation in his head. I can kind of see that happening. Like I'll just say that it's not unthinkable for that to happen. Okay. As for the portal kind of slowing down, I mean, I still think there's a good chunk of players that would love to play for a championship. And I mean, if you're like, I guess we'll see less starters if you're on a playoff team going to the portal compared to backup players. Cause I have to think that if you're buried on a depth chart and you're competing for a championship, like I feel like you'll care, but you won't care as much because like sure. You're kind of watching from the sidelines. Mm-hmm. So that, I guess that's my thoughts on the transfer portal itself too. I guess with the playoff, it's just kind of difficult too, because like I said, like a lot of the things that we thought were unthinkable, like to think, I mean, just like us sitting here now, like thinking that a player would, you know, sit out on a chance of winning a championship, right. It's ridiculous to us, but I mean, something will happen where it'll become, you know, not ridiculous. But I guess going on to, I guess, with the transfer portal, with, I guess, talent going from the Power Five to the Group of Five, that's something I never really considered, honestly, because I think that is something that's very realistic, too, for sure. I think it's something that's very realistic to consider. But I don't know. I think that I definitely feel like that movement would happen mid-season and not when it comes to the, I guess, the playoff, where
sure.
I mean, I feel like something that a UMass fan brought up to me was, because we were talking about their three Power Five games that they're playing this year. I'm like, wow, like, you know, a lot of Group of Five guys don't get afforded that opportunity. Mm-hmm. Now, will UMass win those games? Probably not, but the thing you mentioned was it kind of serves like a scouting opportunity for the program. Where, so I feel like games like that, like the paycheck games, I guess earlier in the season will serve as an opportunity, not the playoff. But right. I just remembered another thing that I wanted to bring up too, I guess, like with the portal. I definitely feel like we'll see more tampering earlier on because, and I say, I'm not a conspiracy guy, but from my experience going to West Point and just knowing how the system works, how we had a receiver, Isaiah Alston, really good receiver that entered the transfer portal and he's passed his junior year. The thing is, entering your junior year, you have to affirm to finish your time out at the academy and serve the 5 years after, or else you'll incur a pretty big financial penalty for your education that you've accrued so far. So I tend to And I guess like when December rolled around after the Army Navy game, when he entered the transfer portal, it was kind of weird because it's like, why would he take that big of a risk if he didn't have something on the table already? Because he wasn't committed anywhere yet. So I feel like we'll see more tampering like that. And I mean, I do think tampering happens, and I think a lot of the tampering will happen before the college, I guess the 12-team playoff. I don't know. I feel like I was like all over the place with that, with my answer, but I just feel like the portal right now, I feel like we're still in the works of trying to work through it in a 14 playoff system, that it's going to be even more of a mess from the 12-team system.
So I think you bring up an interesting point about the tampering. What do you think the best way to mitigate that is? I have my ideas, and I think really we need to change the portal windows. I think it needs to be portal window is open after the postseason. There's no portal during that postseason time. And I think the portal needs to close 30 days before the start of the new season, or whenever fall camps kind of begin. But I think those really need to be your two big windows. And so you could do it post bowl games and postseason. Then there's a cool off period for high school signing days, whatever. And then you have from, let's say, the end of that semester. So let's say end of April through August 1st, make it a hard deadline. So like April 30th to August 1st, that is the other open window of portal. But then that's it. Because I think right now we're, you know, obviously coaches change, you know, the players, teams get those 30-day transfer windows. And I think that's fine. But I think now we're starting to see so much of this portal exodus that nobody knows what's going on. So what are your thoughts on kind of mitigating some of that tampering?
So I think with the tampering, so with the portal window, I think the same way, that it should be, you know, the same timetable after the postseason, because the postseason is just so hard to really prognosticate, which, I mean, that's another one of my points too, I guess, like with a later on, another question that you sent me beforehand. I mean, just interesting point about the portal that I guess I'll share when the time comes. But I mean, the portal, I agree with you, but of course the portal lines up with academics. That being said, it's interesting we're doing this podcast this week when I think yesterday we had the Dartmouth ruling on unionization. Yep. So it's just like, are we going to pretend now with the transfer portal? And I guess if college athletics evolves into this unionized thing, are we going to act like the academics matter and then just, you know, center the portal around college football's postseason now that they're technically unionized and can be fired and everything, and they're not technically like students, they're employees. So that's my one thought with like restructuring the portal windows, which like I feel like the whole conversation about widespread unionization in college football is like a 2 to 3 year conversation at the very least, I think. Yes. I mean, but that, yeah, that's my opinion. I mean, academics kind of gets in the way of the portal window, where it's just one of those things where it's like, it makes sense, but no one wants to say the quiet part out loud about academics.
Nobody ever wants to talk about the academics. And I think, you know, for people saying, oh, well, the postseason, it lasts too long, the new semester starting. Okay, fine. When your team is done with their season, no transfer. You know, I think there's a way to mitigate that as well. Of course, you know, that's there still leaves that opportunity for tampering. You know, coaches and players are going to communicate with each other, whether the window's open or not. It's going to happen. It's happened a lot, and a lot more than we're even aware of. Like we know that's a thing. But I think that, I mean, those might be some of the best ways to kind of mitigate some of that, by locking it into a dedicated window that is well-defined, that is consistent year in and year out. I mean, if Jim Harbaugh at Michigan is going to get in trouble for the hamburger thing, buying a recruit a hamburger, I think it officially was dubbed for contact with a recruit during non-contact period, then I think coaches need to be held accountable for tampering with players on other rosters. And I think the NCAA really needs to crack down on that a lot more than they do on a coach buying a kid a hamburger who's considering going to that school. An $8 hamburger, $7 hamburger is not as bad as the potential implications of massive NIL deals being voided and created by coaches interacting with players in inappropriate time periods during and after the college football season.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, it all comes down to NIL. And like I guess to go back to my Army example, like, that's mm-hmm. the only thing that could explain him. Like yeah, you can say, yeah, like he bet on himself. Like, Isaiah Olsen is an amazing receiver. Like, he'll do great in any regular spread system, which I do think he's worth betting on himself. But it's like, even then, like, he's a smart guy, you know.
Yep.
Of course, West Point guy, he's smart. Like, he's not gonna accrue a six figure penalty for academics,
right,
if he can't negotiate a little bit, like, you know, tamper, like, with I guess another coach to say, hey, can you buy out, you know, my West Point contract, and then I'll play for you. So I do agree. It's just hard because, like, there just really hasn't been, like, I guess, a tampering scandal. I mean, like, I guess we hear coaches saying that, oh, we're being tampered with, but, like, that's I guess that's the extent that it goes to. It's like coaches just say their players are being tampered with, and
exactly,
there's just no, like, concrete evidence.
Exactly. There's no real evidence. But I think that's where, you know, if the NCAA is going to continue to do their thing, that's where you really need to start looking. And that's where you need to crack down. I think that's far more harmful to the integrity of the game, which I don't know that the game really has that much integrity left, I'll be honest. But I think that's infinitely more harmful than a coach having a brief contact with a recruit. That's my two cents. You know, if they find Harbaugh guilty of that, you know, by all means, you know, punish him accordingly, whatever. But I think that this tampering thing is so much more harmful than interacting with a recruit during the wrong period of time. But that being said, let's go back to the playoffs. We've got a good slate of MAC games coming up this year. We're already looking well in advance, and I know that you did some research on, so I wanted to get your thought on this. Which MAC team, just looking on paper, just looking at who's returning, whatever, do you think has the best shot at making the playoffs for the automatic bid for the Group of Five? Of course, we know that these other conferences, you know, Liberty, they're trying to run it back. Looking really good. You know, App State's always going to be a tough out. You know, there's a lot of great James Madison is going to be eligible this year for the postseason. I think Jacksonville State is going to be eligible for postseason this year, right? So
I think so. Yeah, they did their transition. Yep.
So I, you know, we've got a lot of really good Group of Five programs who are going to be eligible and be able to play for a postseason opportunity. What team do you think out of the Mid-American Conference could be the Group of Five automatic representative?
So my thing is, I always admit it, like, whenever I do my podcast with Jackson, our hardware podcast during the season, that, you know, I'm more like, he's more the X's and O's guy, and I'm more like the stats and storylines guy. So it was, like, difficult doing the research with, like, having to look at 24/7, having to look at On3, at the transfer portal. I guess that's just the reality of prognosticating teams and covering teams nowadays.
Yeah.
But I will say, I was thoroughly impressed with what Northern Illinois both retained and what they both got out of the transfer portal. They got a couple of great talents on defense. They got a Fordham transfer, his name escapes me. They got a Southeast Missouri transfer, both at linebacker. Both had just a really good defense that they had last year. And then, of course, on offense too, like, yes, there's questions at quarterback with Rocky Lombardi. But aside from that one game in 2021 against Kent State, like, they're not asking Rocky Lombardi to throw for, like, 500 yards in a game.
Right.
Like, they aren't going to ask your quarterback to do that when, you know, they return a 1,000-yard rusher. They return Trayvon Rudolph, who briefly entered the portal, but then came back out of the portal.
Yep.
I was thoroughly impressed with, like, how much Northern Illinois has. And it's just crazy to talk about Northern Illinois, because throughout the Thomas Hammack tenure, I love him as a coach. I really enjoyed his Twitter post after his Holston Twitter post with his parents holding the Camellia Bowl trophy after the Camellia Bowl.
That was awesome.
They're just so inconsistent. Like, they're just an inconsistent program. So I say this with risk. But I was really impressed with Northern Illinois, and I think they're the favorite in the West, just considering that there's questions at quarterback for Toledo. There's questions. I mean, Toledo returns a good amount on defense, but of course, Quinyon Mitchell is, like, the big, you know, I won't say generational talent, but the game breaking talent that they lose on defense, even. So there's questions on defense in the secondary. So Northern Illinois really impressed me. sadly, Miami of Ohio lost. I think they lost too much in the transfer portal. So, I wouldn't say impressed, but I do think they're bound for a drop off, not too big, but something that I want to raise, not exactly a favorite, but with all the transfers happening during bowl season, it was hard to like get a read on any team. But I guess one team that really impressed me during bowl season was Ohio, because I remember making my pick for the game. I had Georgia Southern beating Ohio in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. But I mean, if there is any roster in the Group of Five that was more depleted than Ohio, you'd be hard pressed to find it. But still, Parker Navarro, third string quarterback, impressed, had an efficient performance, ran the ball well, he was kind of like a throwback to, I guess, original years of Frank Solich's tenure. Where, like, you know, they try to like follow that Nebraska mold. And of course, too, like the running back. I mean, sure, I forget his last name, but I know his first name's Ricky, but the guy, the running back that had four touchdowns as a freshman.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, freshman. Yeah, like they really impressed me to show like the amount of depth that Ohio had. So I gotta say Northern Illinois is my favorite, but Ohio might be close behind him.
I love the Ohio pick. That's not the direction I was going. You talk about Miami losing, you know, talent, whatever. And I agree. Miami is losing a lot, but they are also retaining a lot. And I think we're going to, I think it looks like, and I don't have confirmation on this, so I don't want to, but it looks like Brett Gabbert may be trying to come back for his final outing. And again, that's just what I've heard through the grapevine. So Miami folks, if you have information, please feel free to send that to me. That's what I've heard. And I think that, you know, after that injury last year against Toledo, he really wants a shot at like, let's go prove what I've got one last time. I look at the schedules, I think, and maybe this is a little of my Toledo bias coming out, and I recognize that, but I look at the schedule. Toledo's toughest non-conference game is a game at Mississippi State. It's a game they can absolutely win. You know, Toledo's got a solid defense. Offensively, they're bringing back some really good pieces. Yes, they do lose Penny Boone to the transfer portal, just transferred to Louisville. And then obviously Daquan Finn just transferred to Baylor. But they do retain Tucker Gleason, who 2 years ago filled in for three or four games for Daquan Finn when he was hurt. So, you know, Tucker Gleason knows the system. They retain their head coach, which you know how hard that is to do in college football anymore, especially in the Group of Five. So they do retain their head coach, Jason Candle, and they have a good returning staff as well. Toledo is, I don't want to say they're my favorite, but I like on paper what they have in front of them. You know, they get tough games like Miami at home, of course. Again, you know, just the return trip for the Red Hawks. They have Bowling Green at home. They get Eastern Michigan on the road. They get Western Michigan on the road. Who? Western Michigan's going to be really good this year. I really like what Western Michigan's doing. Coach Lance Taylor is really laying a solid foundation up there. Watch out for Western Michigan. I don't necessarily think they're going to win the thing. Watch out for Western Michigan. I guess kind of sticking in that same vein though, let's go down and say the MAC does not earn the automatic bid. What's the likelihood that our aforementioned MAC teams, you know, our favorites, if you will, earn an at-large bid? Where obviously now, you know, the Group of Five is guaranteed one bid. So one bid for five conferences, but the rules do not say we can't have multiple teams in. I imagine they'll favor the Big Ten and the SEC, of course, especially these two mega conferences that are a third of college football now. But I would not be surprised to see consideration for a second Group of Five in any given year. Could it be a MAC school this coming year if, like, let's say Liberty runs the table?
So I guess on that point, I kind of want to circle back a little bit. Mentioned on the schedule with Toledo, I think scheduling is huge, because the thing is, it's like, I guess you can look at this question in two ways. Easy, like, I guess the best combination between easiest path and most talented team, and just straight up most talented team. In my opinion, like, Northern Illinois, most talented team, but you look at their non-conference schedule, they have a game against Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. You know, Miami, who you're high on, They also have a game against Notre Dame, which is crazy that Notre Dame scheduled two MAC schools in 1 year. I know their fans are going crazy that they have two MAC schools, Navy and Army. So,
Yeah, that's a it's not a great schedule if you're Notre Dame.
I mean, debatable. I love Notre Dame Navy is one of my favorite rivalries. I will always step in to defend Notre Dame
Sure.
Navy, and they're playing Army too. Of course, I have to defend Army,
Sure,
but yeah,
sure.
like not a great schedule. Of course, I know they're probably kicking and screaming over that one. But like, I guess a combination between like easiest path and like easiest, I guess, or I guess most talented team, just depends on how you look at it. I think with that being said, in terms of like, I feel like the scenario for a MAC team to get it at large would be, I'd say, an American team being ranked ahead of them probably would have to go undefeated, and then another undefeated MAC team running the table at 13-0. It would probably have to be Miami or Northern Illinois beating Notre Dame, which it's doable. We saw Notre Dame lose at home against Marshall, a Marshall team that I think ended up being 7-6 that year, if not 8-5. So like we've seen Notre Dame falter at home and like really have some, I guess, I won't say head scratching losses, but Notre Dame has tended to play down at their competition in the 2 years of Marcus Freeman's tenure, which I like Marcus Freeman a lot as a coach, but it is just a bad tendency that they have to do so, especially like the way that Northern Illinois likes to play, like with Northern Illinois, how they play tough defense, they run the ball, they shorten the game. That's exactly what killed Notre Dame back in 2022 against Marshall, where Kalon Laybourne had, I think, like 170 yards or so, and just ran straight through that defense. So I think that one scenario, it's possible, anything's possible in college football, of course, but I feel like that would have to be the one scenario where Miami or Northern Illinois beats Notre Dame, and Notre Dame can't just lay an egg the rest of the year, where it has to be like the 2021 season where Notre Dame lost to Cincinnati, sure, but they won every single other game to prove their legitimacy. So that's a scenario that I can see, but I just don't think it's likely. As much as I would love it, we both would love it. I mean, it's just not likely.
I think I would really, really love that if a MAC team made it as an at-large. That'd be a dream come true for a MAC guy.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess speaking on like easiest path, I feel our most realistic path, I guess, we saw this year with SMU and Liberty, where it doesn't matter like who you play in the Power Five, like the committee wants you to win those games. Like, yeah, SMU, I mean, I can't really like defend the TCU loss. Like, if you want to be a legitimate Group of Five contender, you have to beat teams like TCU. But they didn't care that they lost to 10-2 Oklahoma. So same thing with like Ohio. Ohio's a game. That's a game that I'm liking a lot week one against Syracuse, where Syracuse new coach. They had quarterback issues the previous year. The future isn't looking too bright. Well, actually, never mind. Sorry, for a brief moment I forgot Kyle McCord was transferring to Syracuse. But even still, Kyle McCord in a new system. We saw Ohio beat an Iowa State team that nearly went to the Big 12 title last year. So that's one that I like, where seeing that Ohio can run the table at 13-0 with a Power Five win, it could potentially leapfrog them over a 12-1, 11-2 American team.
Fair enough. Fair enough. That I think that's about all I have for us this week. First off, thank you again for joining me. I really appreciate it. I've appreciated our friendship over the last probably a year or so now, just interacting on social media and just kind of talking sports all the time. But speaking of social media, why don't you go ahead and tell people where they can find you, where they can find your work, and plug those socials for us.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. I really appreciate it. Again, it's not like a broken record too with my, I guess, gratitude for being afforded the opportunity to be on here. But on social media, you can find me at Omar Rashan Borja, just my name at Twitter. Just look up the Burger Popper. I'm sure like that'll come up easily. And then I do my podcast with my partner Jackson during the season. We do some stuff in the off season, the Hardware Pod. You can find that on YouTube, on Spotify, and all those places. We have our own Instagram page as well, which we haven't really posted to as much, but we may in the off season if time affords us. But we have a Hardware and TikTok page for Hardware Pod, and then I do most of my writing for Redshirt Sports. It's at underscore Redshirt Sports. Excuse me, and then do a little bit of writing on the side for As for Football whenever I'm afforded the opportunity to write about my alma mater. And it's not Homer riding. I'll tell it like it is. But yeah, right for Astro Football too. So those, I guess that's just everywhere you can find me. I guess I'm a jack of all trades. I've even written about indoor football before. So
Awesome. Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Omar, a great wealth of knowledge and, ability to look up things when he doesn't know them. And I'm just appreciative of him joining us on the show. But next week, guys, we're looking at getting into some MAC baseball, MAC softball. Looking forward to kind of doing a season preview on those. So stay tuned. You won't want to miss them. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week.